On the top of Kuftes Omer Aleph, and we're up to Tanya, the second line. Now, just a general feeling about today's daf. A lot of what we're going to do is about various therapeutic methods for various different ailments. And it's not only that we don't understand the Aramaic here when they talk about different plants and different concoctions. I mean, it's worse than that, because even if you translate it into English, you still don't understand. So I'll do the best I can. We're going to talk about certain things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos because of the obvious therapeutic nature of the action. Other actions could possibly be done by healthy people. And it's not muchach, it's not absolutely clear and demonstrated to everybody that he's doing it for the sake of refuah. And in those cases, according to almost all the Rishonim, it's mutter. Rashi has his own unique shita that even if it's something that a healthy person would do, but if he does it because he's a chola, then it's prohibited. Then we're going to have a discussion here about a certain kind of a choli. A person got a real wound on his hand and on his foot and so forth, which is mutter. In other words, that's not even included in the original gzeira. Another thing that we're going to talk about today is salty water. You may recall that yesterday we spoke about mixing salt with water, and in our discussion today, we're not talking about mixing salt with water. We're talking about bodies of water, oceans that are salty, and people would go in there as a refuah for therapeutic purposes. Would you allow to go in there on Shabbos? Would you not? So without further ado, we'll do the best we can with the tools we have. Tanya Rabbi Nosson Omer, Baschorin Hizu. So the last discussion we had on Daf Kuf Ches Amid Beis was about what we call Ruach Ra'ah, that before a person washes his hands in the morning, then a certain evil spirit sort of rests over his hands, and therefore he's not allowed to have contact with certain parts of his body. It's dangerous. And this Ruach Ra is called Bas Chorin, which literally means the daughter of the king, Bas Melech. Bas Chorin merely means a free agent, so to speak. And therefore, Umak Pedes Ad Sheyirchot Yadav Shalosh Pa'amim. So this Braisa Rabbi Nosson adds another element into the equation here about washing your hands against the Ruach Ra, and you've got to wash it three times. And in Shulchan Aruch, there are very detailed requirements here about washing your hands, especially what we call Negelvas in the morning, to get rid of Ruach Ra'ah. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Puch. Puch is a kind of mascara that women used to use over their eyes. Mavir Bas Melech. Melech, right? The Ruach Ra, this evil spirit, which could be dangerous, especially for the eyes, as we discussed yesterday. You know, if you put your eyes that haven't been washed, put your hands into your eyes. So this Puch that women use as a mascara over their eyes is actually beneficial for the eyes. Uposek es hadima, and if you have very teary eyes, then it will help to slow down the tearing process and limit it. Umarbe seyar biafapayim, and if somebody needs more hair on their eyelids, it's helpful to grow the hair. Tanya nami hochi, we have this in a brayser. Rabbi Yosi Omer, Puch Mavir ben Bas Melech. So that's a brisa in the name of Rabbi Yossi that predates the exact same statement of Rabbi Yochanan. The Omar Ukva Omar Shmuel. Now we're going to talk about various kinds of plants, some of which could be beneficial for the eye, some of which apparently are not beneficial for the eye. And Mar Ukva says, in the name of Shmuel, Shmuel was a great doctor, Olin Ein Behem Mishum Refuah, that if you use these kinds of leaves or herbs, then it's not healing for the eyes, which would mean that you're allowed to take it on Shabbos. Now, again, it's not exactly clear whether we're talking about putting these leaves, maybe after you soak them, onto the eye, or maybe it means swallowing this concoction. Omar Rav Yosef Kusbarta, which is otherwise known as Kuzbara here in Israel, a kind of an herb that they use for spices, and in English it's called coriander, Ein ba mishum refuah. It has no impact on the eyes. Okay then, so these are two substances that are not called a refuah. And that's olin, a kind of a grass, and kuzbara, a kind of an herb. Omar Rav Sheshes, kshus, which is also a kind of a plant. It grows on something called hizmi or higi, which are thorn bushes. And this plant grows from the thorn bush. It's not in the ground itself. In English, it's called hops. It's very often used to make beer. And does it have a therapeutic effect or not? And the Gemara says that kishos ein bahem mishum refuah. So once again, this would not be prohibited on Shabbos. Omar Rav Yosef, kuzbarta afilu didi kashali. He says that eating this kind of coriander is damaging for me. Now, what does he mean, afilu didi, even for me? I'm a blind person. Rav Yosef was blind. And if he had eye aches and he took kuzbarta, it was not helpful at all. However, Rav Sheshes was also blind, and he talks about something called gargira, which once again is some sort of a plant. In Hebrew it's called orot, and some say that it's very beneficial for the eyes, and that's why it's called by the name orot. Orot means it's meir la'einayim, it gives light to the eyes. Oh, mazel tov. So he says, afilu didi mali, even though I'm blind, it actually helps my eyes. So this thing called gargira, is helpful and beneficial for the eyes, and therefore you would not be allowed to eat it on Shabbos because it has the status of a refuah. Omar Mar Ukva Mar Shmuel Kol Mili Kshus Shoru. Any kinds of hops are permissible because even if it has some sort of a therapeutic effect, but it's eaten also by healthy people. So there's no, as we said before, it's not muchach, it's not clear to the onlooker that he's doing it as a refuah. Okay. However, labar, there's one kind of hops which is accepted, which is the exception to the rule, and that's called terosa. And terosa, you're not allowed to eat on Shabbos because people eat it only specifically for refuah. I guess it probably has a very bitter kind of a taste. Okay then. Omar Rav Chisda, Shrika Tavya Shari. Now, this is a very interesting statement here. It's not relevant to the Gemaras that we had until now about refuah, but it's relevant to what's called tikkun. Tikkun means something that you really fix up. And you may recall way back when we learned Parakira, I think it was, we discussed a certain small fish that if you pour warm water on them, it's a tikkun, and therefore you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. And here, Rav Chisda, in terms of a roast, it's called tzli in Hebrew, and it's still warm, it's not boiling hot, it's not burning hot. Are you allowed, A, to smear oil on the roast? I'm not sure if it's roast meat or roast chicken. Are you allowed to pour beaten eggs on top of the roast? And here Rav Chisda makes a distinction. He says, as far as meshicha, as far as pouring the oil on, that's mutter. However, pipue beye, beye is another word for an egg, that you're not allowed to do. What does that mean? If you have the eggs already prepared before Shabbos, you beat up the egg, then it's okay. You can pour the egg on top of the roast as long as it's not boiling hot. And that's not called tikkun. It's only a luxury item. If, on the other hand, all you have is raw eggs and you want to beat up the eggs, that's usur. Because when people beat up eggs, it looks to the spectator like he's going to pour it into some sort of a tavshil. Now, debesu dizeiri avdile lechiyavar ashi. Now, this woman, I don't know her name, but I can tell you she was married twice. Her first marriage was to Zeiri, one of the great Amoraim. And her second marriage was to Chiyabar Ashi, after Zeiri passed away. And Chiyabar Ashi was younger than Zeiri, and apparently he was a younger colleague of Zeiri. So he was sort of like a Talmud, almost like a disciple of Zeiri. And she took the oil and the eggs that were already beaten before Shabbos, and she poured it over the tzli. Right? She did what we call basting, I think it's called in English. Anyway, when she prepared it for Chiyabar Ashi, her second husband, lo achal, he refused to eat it because he thought that this was called metaken, that this is something that's more crucial to the food, and without it, it's not perfect. Amrleh, she said to him, Lirabcha, meaning my first husband, Zeiri, Avdileh, I prepared it for him, V'yochal. He had no compunctions. V'atlo achlas, you think it's prohibited. You don't want to benefit from something that is prohibited on Shabbos. And the Gemara explains that Zeiri l'tameh, Zeiri, who allowed this kind of a basting on Shabbos with the shemen and the beitzim, he's reflecting his shita, the Omer Zeiri, no sein adam yayin sol umayim tzlulim l'socha mishameres b'Shabbos. What we have here is a mishameres, which is a sieve. In Hebrew it's called a misaneness. And they used to pour wine that had a mixture in it of sediments into the sieve. The sediments would stay on top. And this would make the wine a little bit clearer. In other words, it really was already yayin tzolul. He did one process of sifting. Now on Shabbos he wants to do a second process. Is eino choshesh. He's allowed to do this on the second round. Why? Alma, what's the fundamental underlying principle of Zeiri? Kevan demishtete hachi lav midi ka'ovit. Since it's suitable for drinking, even before you pour it a second round into the sieve, so it's already yayin tzolul and mayim tzlulim, it's clear, just you want to jack it up to a higher level, then that's not considered, in this case, borer. Hachinami, by analogy, kevan demisachil hachi, in other words, once the roast comes out of the oven, you could eat it without pouring the oil and the beaten up eggs on it, beat up eggs. Lav midi kovet, it's not called tikkun. And basically the rule of Zairi, and you could apply this to filtered water. I mean, you have to ask yourself the question, would you drink the water if it wasn't filtered? Let's say you didn't have filtered water. Are you allowed to pour the, you know, open up the hatch, you know, in order to get filtered water? Well, you have to ask yourself whether or not it's crucial. You know, if you can admit to me that you would not drink the water unless you filter it, then you might have a problem on Shabbos. Okay. Now, we mentioned that as far as refuah is concerned, there are various situations in which you're not allowed to take something on Shabbos that's clear and obvious for the sake of therapy. However, Omar Ukva, Mishina Kfaya Do Oraglo, when it comes to some sort of a chavola, he was injured in his hand or his foot, Tsomtsa Biyayin, so let's say he's bleeding, and somehow if he soaks his hand or his leg that's bleeding into wine, it's going to stop the blood. Eino choshesh. And this is permissible. And we'll try to understand this as we go along, but first let's see, Ibai Lahu, the Gemara wants to know, Chalamai, what about vinegar? Ma'u adin lishol says amaka b'chometz. Chometz is vinegar. Amar Rav Hillel Rav Ashi ki avina be Rav Kahana. When I was studying in the Beis Medrash of Kahana, Amri, he told me that chalolo, that although you're allowed to soak your foot in wine, but not in vinegar, because vinegar is not just something that will stop the blood from flowing, but vinegar is so sharp that it's therapeutic in nature. So the Sukachover, the Yigley Tal, who wrote massive work on Shabbos, he goes back and forth about whether Atziras Adam is called a refuah. And if you assume that just stopping the blood is called therapeutic, then why distinguish between wine and vinegar? So he has a whole discussion here based on different types of bleeding. There's the first bleeding that comes out, the second blood that comes out. So that's a long discussion. Omar Rava, Hani Bnei Machoza, came into Mefanke, Afilu Chamra Nami Masilu. Whether or not the wine could be therapeutic depends upon the nature of your skin. And here, he says, Rava, in our local town, the Bnei Machoza, they have very sensitive skin. It's called Oram Rach, very soft skin. And even wine is strong enough to be therapeutic, and therefore it's prohibited. So that distinction between wine, which we allowed, and vinegar, which we prohibited, doesn't apply in Bnei Mechuza. So it becomes a relative theory. You know, in certain areas, even something which might not be so therapeutic in other parts of the world, but in that part of the world, it's called the therapy. And that leads the Gemara to ask the following question. Ravina Ikla Lebe Rav Ashi. Rav Ikla came to the house of Rav Ashi. V'chazye didrichale Chamor agav de kara. Chamor is a donkey. Drichale, even in modern Hebrew, is lidroch. It's a Hebrew word. And a donkey stepped on his foot. He was injured now on the top of his foot. The Yosef, and on Shabbos, he sat, cut somisle, and he soaked it, the challah, in vinegar. Amole, so Ravina asked him, lo sovrele mar. He spoke to him in respectfully in third person. Do you not hold Lahadi Omar of Hillel Chalolo, that to soak a wound in vinegar is prohibited? Amalei, so Ravina responded, Gav Hayad Vegav Haregel Shiny, the top part of the hand and the top part of the foot, that's where he had his wound, is different. they have a status of sakana, of absolute danger. And therefore we could be mechal Shabbos for the sake of this open wound. Ikud Yamri, we have a different version, Chazie de Kotzomis Le Bechamra. Ravina saw that Rav Ashi was soaking it in wine, and he said to him, Amar Lelo, Sovrele Mar Lahodi Amar Rav Ahani B'nei Mechoza, in an area of the city called Mechoza, came in the Mefanke, their skin is very soft and sensitive, if Afilu Chamra Nami Masilu, even wine is therapeutic. Umar, and you are Nami Homophonic. You have very sensitive skin, and therefore for you, even wine should be prohibited. On Malay, so he answered him, Gav Hayad Vagav Regal Shiny. These parts of the body, if they're wounded, are very dangerous. The Omar of Adabar Masna Omarav, the Gav Hayad Vagav Regal, Harein Kimako Shel Halal. It's like an open some sort of damage to an inner organ, which is called the halal aguf, right, the internal part of the body, and any such maka is considered pikuach nefesh umechalin olam esa shabbos. Now, here we have a whole discussion in the Rishonim and the Poskim. Why did the Gemara have to go so far as to say that this maka on the outside of the hand, the outside of the foot, is mechalina sashabas, it's a sakana? Forget about that. We have halacha that a chole, someone who has to get into bed, we allow him any sort of therapeutic process. I mean, again, if it's not chil shabas only in this case sakana. But even a chole who has fever and he has to get into bed and his whole body is affected by the illness, he's allowed to take medicine on Shabbos. So why did the Gemara, to justify the soaking of this wound inside of a barrel of wine or vinegar, because it's a maka, it's equivalent to a maka sheyesh ba halal. I mean, why do we need that? So somebody showed him, say that although he was injured, he wasn't feeling so bad. You know, he didn't have a fever from it, he didn't have to get into bed, and therefore he did not have the status of a chola. And others want to say that you see from this Gemara that even a chola should not be taking medicine unless he's a chola sheish bo sakana. But again, that's not the general opinion of the poskim. Okay, I mentioned to you at the outset that there are certain bodies of water that are very salty, and people would go bathing there for therapeutic purposes. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a brisa, Rochtzin b'mei gror, b'mei chamoson, b'mei asya. Okay, even though these bodies of water are very salty, and they, to some extent, they are therapeutic, but you're allowed to bathe there because apparently even healthy people would on occasion bathe there. Or b'mei Tveria, right, those are chamei Tveria if you've ever been. Right, the hot springs of Tveria. And people will bathe there for the pleasure of it, and it's not necessarily a refuah, even though, again, according to most poskim, even though he's doing it for the sake of refuah. Aval lo b'yama gadol. Now, some say that yama gadol are the oceans of the world. It's all considered like one continuous body of water, and the oceans are salty, and it becomes more profoundly recognizable that he's doing it for the purpose of refuah. V'lo b'mei mishra. Mei mishra are mayim sheshorim bo pishton. Right, these are waters that have, you soak the linen before it became linen, when it's still fibers, and the water becomes soruch, meaning it becomes contaminated, spoiled. Normally you would never wash yourself and bathe in such waters. The only reason you're doing it is for a refuah. Again, I'm not sure what the therapeutic effect might be of this mei mishra. V'lo b'yama shel stone. And the Gemara now understands, based on this brisa, that when you go into the Dead Sea, you do so not for pleasure, but for refuah. I mean, we know today even, you know, people come from Germany, other countries, people have psoriasis, different skin diseases, and they come to Yam HaMelech. Other people will go even for the sake of pleasure. It's a very unique kind of experience, floating on the top of the water. But and as we said yesterday, you can't drown in that water. However, right now the Gemara is of the opinion that it is definitely 90%, we'll say, is used for therapeutic. So the Gemara asks, Rav Minu, we have a steer from another Brice. So the Brice says, Rochatzim b'mei Tveria u'b'yam HaGadol, that on Shabbos you're allowed to go into the Yam HaGadol. Avolo b'mei Mishra, v'lo b'yam HaShel Sdom, is Kashi Yam HaGadol, a Yam HaGadol. The first Brice said, you're allowed to go into the Yam HaGadol, into the ocean. And it's not necessarily Muchach and Nikar that it's L'Rufua. But this Brice says the first price says it's also, and the second price says it's muta. So the Gemara is going to try a number of different attempts to reconcile the issue of bathing in an ocean. Again, others say, by the way, you should know that May Yama Gudel is referring to the Mediterranean Ocean. They claim it is a higher salt content. But I'm going to assume for our purposes it's any ocean. Lokasha, ha Rabbi Meir v'ha Rabbi Yehuda. So we're about to embark upon a machlokes with regard to two different dinim. Both are interdependent between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda about the status of various bodies of water as far as what's called mayim chayim. The Torah requires mayim chayim. We're going to read about it actually in this week's parsha, with regard to Kiddush Mechatos, Parshas Chukas, but in other parshios, for example, in the parsha of Zav, a Zav needs to purify himself with Tvila in Mayim Chayim, which is a natural spring. And in the parsha Mitzora, when they did something to purify the Mitzora, which is called Hazaz Dam, and they had to mix it with Mayim Chayim, and also, as we said before, Kiddush Meichatos, all these require Mayim Chayim. Then there's something called a mikvah. A mikvah is a body of water that doesn't flow, and it's filled by, it's a gathering of water from the rainwater. Now, a mayon, which is natural spring water, not only does it have an upgraded status for Zav and Taras HaMetzora and Kiddush Mechatos, it also is kosher even when it's Zochalin. Zochalin means even when it flows. So a natural body of water, even if it's flowing, you can use it for Tara purposes. But a mikvah, by definition, has to be Mayim Mechunasim. It has to be water that is stationary. It's collected in an area. That's why it's called a mikvah. And now we're going to learn a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda the Snan. We learned in this is a Mishnah that appears in two places in Parah and in Mikvos. Kol ayamim kimikvah. Rabbi Meir has a very liberal understanding, but it's going to be a chumrah, as you'll see in a minute. So it's not so liberal about all the waters of the world, without an exception. In other words, to him, ocean water is considered a mikvah. And although you don't see where it's gathered together, but subterranean receptacles to catch the water. So therefore, it does not have the status of Mayim Chayim for the three laws that we learned before. And the only time you could jump into such a body of water and use it as a mikvah would only be if it's stationary. It's Mechunasim V'omdim. Then it has a din of a mikvah. Shenemar Ulemikvei HaMayim Kara Yamim. So the Yamim, after God created them, all the oceans of the world are called Mikveh, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, there's one exception, and that's Yam HaGadol. Again, if the Yam HaGadol refers to one specific sea, or perhaps it goes even beyond that, but he says that Yam HaGadol is Kemikveh, which again would mean that it's not Mitayer if it's moving. So again, if we assume that the Yam HaGadol, let's go with that sheet. Again, you know, you have to really analyze this back and forth. But if the Yam HaGadol is, let's say, the Mediterranean, for example, then that ocean has the status of a mikveh, and it's not metayr bezochlin if it's on the move. It doesn't have the status of mayim chayim for those dinim that we mentioned, because the pasuk of mikveh amayim kor yamim is a specific reference to the yama gadol. But other bodies of water have the status of a mayon. Lo nemar yamim el sheyesh bo minei yamim harbe. And the reason why this particular body of water, which is called the yama gadol, is called in the pasuk mikveh amayim kor yamim, because it has in it minim harbe, which means that there are a lot of different types of fish that live in this body of water. And each fish has a different ta'am, a different taste to it. And it's all based on the water, so the water has different kinds of qualities to it. Rabbi Yossi Omekol Yamim Mitarim Bezochlin, he has the other extreme, Shita. And he holds any body of water can be mitayar zochlin, even though it's moving and it's flowing like a mayon. However, despite that fact, psulim lezovim l'tzomorim l'kadish behen mechatos, that the yamim are excluded from certain specific dinim which require mayim chayim. In any event, let's see how this whole discussion about mikvos impacts on our discussion about going into the Yam HaGadol on Shabbos. Rabbi Meir does not distinguish between the Yam HaGadol and any other body of water. And he classifies Yam HaGadol as belonging to universal Yamim, all Yamim. He would hold that you can bathe in Yam HaGadol on Shabbos just like you can do so in all bodies of water. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, distinguishes between the Yam HaGadol and other bodies of water. He's going to tell us that it's asur to be rochets in the Yam HaGadol. And Tosfos here on the bottom of the page tries to work very hard to understand the Gemara's analogy between the status of the Yam HaGadol, whether it's a status of a mikveh, whether it's mayim chayim. What does that have to do with Shabbos? I mean, either it's therapeutic on Shabbos or it's not. Tosfos works overtime on this. In any event, the Gemara is going to reject this analogy outright. Maskif le Rav Nachman by Yitzchak. Here we're going to turn to Kuftes Amid Beis. Amor de Pligi, when do they have this machlokes? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, where the Yam HaGadol is equivalent to has the same status as other Yamim. That's linyan Tuma Vitara. They have a machlokes, how to interpret the Pasuk, Ula Mikve Mayim Kara Yamim. So, is this Yam HaGadol the status of mikvah and it's exclusive, or any yam has that same status? Aval inyan Shabbos, mi shabbat luhu. You know, if you're talking about whether refuah and you want to bathe in the Yam HaGadol, that's not relevant to this machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Elo, so therefore we have to come up with another explanation as to the discrepancy in the brises regarding bathing on Shabbos in the Yam HaGadol. Elo Omer Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak lo kasha. If you just dip yourself into the Yam HaGadol and you come out quickly, then that's mutter, because that's not lirafua. Lirafua means you have to stay in the water for a certain period of time. He doesn't tell you how many minutes till it has a therapeutic effect. So the Gemara asks Akasha, Bimayu kimtel basraisa. How did you now interpret the second brisa that allows you to go and bathe in the Yam HaGadol de lo ishtai, because you just dipped yourself in and you came right out? Il de lo ishtai. If you're telling me that the brisa is referring to a case where he just dips himself in and comes out, is afilu me mishra nami? What about the case of that water, that contaminated water? I mean, there also, if you were doing it for a refuah, then if you dip yourself in and come out immediately, then that should be mutter according to you. And desanya, and yet we learned in the brisa, rochtzim b'mei tveria, u'b'mei mishra, u'b'yamim shel sdom, v'afal pishe yesh lo chatotim b'rosho. So in these kinds of cases, where he's going into mei tveria, mei mishra, or the yam shel sdom, there's the Dead Sea, he has certain injuries, you know, on his head, and he's doing it, he's bathing, he's allowed to bathe l'shem refuah, b'medvar mur shalonish taha, aval nishtaya asur. So here's a braisa that says explicitly that even in the case of Bei Mishra, you're permitted to go in there if you immediately come out. Only if you stay in the water, you know, bathing in the water, and you stay in the water, then it's considered a refuah. So therefore, we have to come up with another possible interpretation to reconcile the two braises. Ella, Yama Gadol, Yama Gadol Okasha. There are different parts of the Yama Gadol. Ha be Yofin Shabo, ha be Royin Shabo. So it seems that the Yama Gadol has more salty areas and less salty areas. If it's very, very intensely salty, and the salt content is very high, then it becomes muchach, it's clear that you're doing it for a fool, and that's also. But there are certain parts of the Yam where the salt content is not so high. Me Mishra, Ame Mishra, Nami Lokasha, Hodish Toi, Vahodalosh Toi. And as far as the seeming contradiction in the Braisa about Me Mishra, that contaminated water, it depends whether you're going in and coming out, or you're staying in the water. When you stay in the water, it becomes clear that you're doing it l'shem refu, and therefore it's prohibited on Shabbos. And now we start the Mishnah here on Daf Kuf Tes Amid Beis. Now again, Rabosai, as I said at the outset, there's a lot of stuff here that we don't know what it's all about. Ein ochlin izovion b'Shabbos. Okay, there's something called HYSSOP, a hysop, some pronounce it hyssop. It's in the parish of Taras HaMetzora. And apparently, this is something that it's a shrub, and it's very, very, very bitter to eat. Only for medicinal purposes would you eat it. Now, exactly what it's good for, hopefully we'll get a picture later on. Lefisha eno machal briyim. It's also because everyone sees clearly he's doing it for the refuah. Aval ochel hu es yo ezer v'shosa ab abuvroeh. Okay, these are things that on the one hand, there are people who are healthy who will either eat these things or drink these things, and the Gemara is going to explain what they are and what they're good for. So even though he's doing it for the purpose of therapy, it's mutter, because there are healthy people that would eat it or drink it. Kola ochlin, anything that's eaten by healthy people, ochel adam lirafua. And all the Rishonim, except for Rashi, interpret this to mean that even though his intention is because he's a chola and he's doing it for therapeutic purposes, it's mutter, because anyone else would eat it. V'chol mashkim shosa. And any liquids that other people, healthy people, would drink, he's allowed to drink, even though he's a chol, he's doing it for therapy. Chutz, mi made the kolim v'kos ikrin. Okay, we'll have a whole gemara about this. Anyway, these are types of drinks which are only, you know, they're very possibly even dangerous, but for certain ailments, they're absolutely crucial, and therefore it's done, but exclusively for a fool. Mipnei shehem li yiroka. Now, what kind of ailment is yiroka? And the Mishnah specifies this for, and the therapy of which is made to call him because ikrim, it's jaundice. Okay? We call it yellow, and the Gemara calls it yarok. Now, in general, I mean, you have to learn Masechta Nida for this, but the Gemara's yarok is very similar to our yellow. Anyway, this is a blood disease. And you and I know that after a baby's born, they always want to know whether a chas v'shalom, you know, it's yellow. But these are healthy things to take if you're suffering from jaundice. And therefore, you're not allowed to take it on Shabbos because it's l'refuah. Again, you and I would think that a person who's suffering from this ailment certainly should be considered a chola. Okay, but maybe he can take it before Shabbos or take it after Shabbos. I don't know. Aval shosu made the kolim litzmo. Even though we said before that made the kolim, we don't know exactly what it is right now, but whatever it is, made the kolim, which Gemara is going to try to explain, is lirfuah. But nevertheless, if he's very thirsty and he wants to drink it, he's allowed to drink it. Now Rashi says he's only allowed to drink it because he's not a chola. He's thirsty and he's not a chola. If he's a chola, then obviously he's doing it for refuah, and then he's not allowed to do. V'sach shemen ikarin. We said that there's something called kos ikarin, which is something that you drink. And let's say he wants to take this kos ikarin, it's very thick, and it has an oily kind of substance to it, and he wants to use it to anoint himself, that he's allowed to do shalol refuah, because he's not interested in refuah. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef Ezov, which we said at the beginning is a hyssop, and it's only eaten by sick people, is called in Aramaic Avrosa Bar Hamag. Okay, this is a certain species of a hyssop that grows in a place called Bar Hamag, which he translates as Gemi, and it's a Suf Shegadel Besfas HaGam. So we're talking about a marshland, and that's where you'll find it growing. V'izvayon, which is also mentioned in the Mishnah, is Avrasa Bar Hinnik. Again, a type of a hyssop that grows amongst the thorn bushes. Ula Omar. Ula says that Ezov is Marva Chivara, which means it's a kind of a plant. And Ula Ikla Lebei Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda Aisi Lekamei, they brought in front of him Marva Chiyuva. Omar Ula says, Hainu Ezov. Wow. He reminded himself of Pasuk Chumash, the Ksiv Bo Raisa, which we use for the Taras HaMetzora. Rav Papi Omar, Shumshuk. He says that a hyssop, which is prohibited on Shabbos, is called the Shumshuk. Omar Rav Yirmiyahu Midifti, Kavasi de Rav Papi Mistabra. He holds like Rav Papi. This not because we learned that a Mishnah in Masechta Pora, mitzvah hazav yezov is shlosha klochim. He takes three roots, ubahem shlosha giv olim, and inside, growing out of these roots, there are small shoots. Vishumshuk hu demishtakhach. He says, if that's the description of hyssop of ezov, then that's exactly shumshuk. Shumshuk has all these qualities. Now the Gemara wants to know, okay, he's taking Izvion on Shabbos, Lirfua. What would be its therapeutic value even during the week? Lamai Achlile. And the Gemara answers, Likuk Ini, which are Toloim B'nei Me'ayim. So when you have worms and stuff, then you take it. What's that drug called? Okay. Something with a V. Anyway, so these are things that you take. B'may ochule, what? How do you prepare it? He says b'sheva tamri uchmata. Right, you take seven dates, black dates, and you mix them together with this plant, which is called Ezvion in the Mishnah's language. Mimai hava. Now, what the Gemara wants to know? Why did? What causes these worms in his stomach? Mikimcha desari, if you use barley flour, the chalef alei arba'in yomin, and it sat around for 40 days, and that's going to bring different worms into the intestines. The Mishnah says, "Aval ochel hu es yo ezer." You're allowed to eat yoezer, because even healthy people eat yoezer. What's yoezer? Pu tank. Okay, this is a kind of a peppermint, or a mint. Lemai achlile, why would it be healthy? Le arkosa, for worms in the liver. Lemai achlile, how do you prepare such a mixture? B'sheva tamri de chivosa, again with the black, chivosa is, machvarta is white, seven white dates. Mimai havya, and what causes these worms to come appear in your liver? Mi umtza aliba rekana. If he eats roasted meat that was roasted on a barbecue, and he hasn't eaten anything, he has an empty stomach. So that's not good, to eat barbecued meat on an empty stomach. Bisra shamna, or he eats very fatty meat, aliba rekana, on an empty stomach. Bisra de Torah, or the very heavy meat of a cow, aliba rekana, on an empty belly. Me'am amguza, alivare kano, a certain kind of a walnut that he eats on an empty stomach. Umigire deruvia, okay, these are kind of tilson, what they're called, alivare kano, an empty belly. Umishte maya abasrai, when afterwards, when he drinks water after he ate one of those things that we enumerated, and he hasn't yet eaten anything, that's not healthy. The Gemara says, ve'ilo, let's say he doesn't have, you know, he's suffering from worms, and he cannot get access to any of the things that we mentioned, these possible therapeutic methods, then what's the fallback position? Okay, so the Gemara says the following, that livla tachle chivrasa, he should eat small white cress. The lo, and if he doesn't have that, leisei batanisa, should fast. The leisei bisra shmana, they bring him out fatty meat. The lishtei agumre, they throw it in on burning coals. The limits garma, then he should suck a juicy piece of the meat. The ligma chala, and then he should drink vinegar, take a sip of vinegar. Ikediyami chalalo, others say, leave out the vinegar. Mishum de kashi lekavta, because vinegar is not healthy for the liver. The ilo, let's say he doesn't have any of these fatty meats and burning coals and so forth and so on, is lise gurda di asinta. He should bring a bark of a bush, de grida me ile litatoi, that has been peeled downwards. The lomitatoi li loi, but it hasn't been peeled upwards. Dilma nafka aide fume, lest the worms come out through his mouth. The lishkale beshivre be shivive, the bark should be boiled in beer at twilight. Ula mochar niskirion linikvan di day. And on the next day, he should close his nostrils. The lishte should drink this potion. And the Gemara says, v'chi mifaneim, when he goes to the bathroom, is mifne a shchicha de dikla. He should relieve himself onto the stripped part of a tree. Again, it's hard for me to understand all these methods of therapy, but you know, worms are not good to have in your body. Vishosin aburbora. He's allowed to drink aburbora. My aburbora, what is this? Chum teraya. Chum teraya. My chum teraya. So even the Gemara didn't understand what chum teraya was. So we're in good company. Chutra yechida. Okay, this is Rashi identifies it as a tree that has no branches. And apparently he takes one branch and somehow he makes some sort of drink out of it. It has some sort of sap in it, I guess. Lamai avdile. And what is it good for? Legiluye. It heals a person who might have swallowed some liquid that was left open overnight. That's called Mayim Megulim. And Chazal tell us that Mayim Megulim, if you leave water uncovered overnight, then a snake might inject venom into it. So if he, Chas V'Shalom, drank Mayim Megulim, then the first thing he wants to get a hold of is Chutra Yechida. V'ilo, if he doesn't have Chutra Yechida, is Lese Chamsha Klule. He should bring five roses, V'chamsha Kusata Deshikra, five cups of beer, V'nishkalinu Bahari Adadi. He should boil them together, or cook them together. Ad Dekaima A'anpaka V'nishte, until there is an anpak of the potion, a certain volume, which he should drink. And that's equivalent to a quarter of a vias of a luk. Okay, then. So get yourself beer if you drank Mayim Megulim, and make sure that you cook it with five roses. Okay, Ime Derav Achdevoy Bar Ami. So his mother, Avdele Lahu Gavra, a certain person who had drunk exposed water, she made a concoction with chad klila. Again, before we said you need five, but she only had one rose. The chad kosata the shikra, and one cup of beer. Shakla, she boiled it together, Vishtakalisa, and she gave it to him. Vishagra Tanura. Wow, this is scary. She heats up the oven, Grafte, she shovels it out, and what does she put after she removes everything that's all the coals in the oven? Osvise, she sat him down, Libinse, on top of a brick, Begave, inside the oven. Okay? Now, apparently, this brick was meant to cushion him from the bottom of the oven. I mean, if he would have sat on the bottom of the oven, even after he raked out the coals, I don't have to tell you what would have happened to his rumpus. You know what I mean? He would be jumping to the heavens. And what happened? Vinofak, what came out of his body, was kehutza yarka, some sort of a green substance. I guess the poison flowed from his body as a result of this remedy. Rav Avya Omar, okay, he has another remedy for someone who drank exposed water. Riviasa de chalova mi'iza chivarya. Iza is a goat. Chivarta, as we saw many times, is white. So he's got to get a white goat, and he's got a chalva, means he's got to milk it. And Riviasa, he has to drink a quarter of a lug of milk from a white goat. Okay, this is something that we have to know. You know, the goat's milk. Again, I'm not sure, you know, how much of our goat's milk is from a white goat, unfortunately. They should sell white goat's milk. Okay. Rav Huna bar Yehuda Amar, Lese Esroga Chalisa. You should take an Esrog. Chalisa means sweet. I don't know how you would determine that the Esrog is sweet, but anyway, Ulachaike, Chaike means Lachuk, meaning you carve out a certain hole in it, Vilamne Duvsha, and you fill it with honey, Velosva be milali denura, and you put it on the coals of the fire, so you have an esro cooked in its honey, velechle, and you should eat it. Okay, I'm all game, I'm willing to try this. Rabbi Chanina Amar, he says, oh, this part of the Gemara I really need help with. We have a doctor here, so maybe he'll fill in the details here. I never knew that urine could in any shape or form be healthy for the body. Meiraglayim b'nei arboim yom. If you have urine that's 40 days old, others say that we're talking about urine of a child who's 40 days old. Barzilna lizibura. And he should drink it for a wasp sting. He got stung by a wasp. And he should drink a barzina of urine. Okay, that's a certain measure, a small cup of urine. Revi'ah li'akrava, and a revius of this, which is a much larger amount, if he was bitten by a scorpion. Riva'ah afilu likshafim malu. So the Gemara says, palga revi'ah li'giluya, if he's drinking it because He had imbibed, you know, this exposed water, then all he needs is a half a lug. Well, actually, half a lug is a lot. But revia, and if he drank only a revia of urine, a 40-day-old urine, is likshafim milu. That's good against the witches, against kishuv. Amar Rav Yochanan on Nigron. Okay, now we have water that was used to cook spinach or beets in the water, and that's called a nigron. The Gemara has a whole discussion in Masechta Brachos about what bracha you make on a nigron. Anyway, v'avnager, so you have water in which they boiled avnager, and he says here that avnager is an herb, is my vitiyaka. That's balsam. Malu are very effective. Bein legiluya, whether he drank exposed water, or bein lekshafim, where he was attacked by the witches. Haiman debola chivya. Somebody actually swallowed a snake. I don't know exactly how that happened, but luchle kishusa bimilcha. he should take hops and salt them. Vilirate tlosa mili. And then he should take a run for 3 meals. Okay, I don't know if he has to wear his mask or not. I don't know. Maybe it's just in such a case, well, he's running, so he doesn't have to wear a mask. Rav Shimi bar Ashi chazei lahu gavra. Rav Shimi saw a man, debolach, he actually swallowed a snake. Idmi le kiparasha. And Rav Shimi appeared to him as if he was riding a horse, as if he was a horseman. So I don't know if he did this magically or he just dressed himself up as a horseman. Ochle kishusa b'milcha. I'm not sure why he had to appear as a horseman. He disguised himself. He says here in the footnote, he looked like a very imposing person, and therefore this person who has never swallowed a snake would certainly be shooken up, and he would have a great deal of respect for this awe-inspiring person. And he told him, Ochle kishusa b'milcha, to salt the hops and eat it. And he made him run in front of him. As he rode the horse behind him for 3 meals. And the snake came out of him in pieces. Okay, now Rashi says that he was overwhelmed by fear, and the hops that he drank weakened him, and the running caused his body temperature to rise, and the snake died inside of him. Ika Diamri, others have a different version. Rav Shimi bar Ashi Bola Chivya, he himself swallowed a snake. Asa Elio, and the great Elio Anovi came. Idmile Kiparsha, he showed up as a horseman. Ochle Kishusa Milcha, he had him eat this hops with salt. Vari Te Kami Tlasavili, made him run for 3 meals. Vinofeg Mine Guvi Guve, and the snake came out in pieces. Haiman Ditarke Chivye, one who was bitten by a snake. Lese Ubra de Chamra Chivarta, he has to find a white donkey that's pregnant, and he has to take out the embryo from the white donkey. Velikre has to tear it open. Velusve Loye, and he has to place it on top of the bite where he's bitten by a snake. Vahani mili deloish takach trefa. However, this is only effective if the donkey was not found to be a trefa. Now, a donkey is a non-kosher animal, but a trefa means that he had some sort of defect that's life-threatening. And such a donkey would not be, you know, the embryo would not be good for this snake bite. Hahu, and with this we'll conclude on the top of Daf Kuf Yud, Bar Kosha de Pumpadisa, some sort of an appointee of the king of Pumpadisa, de Trakye Chivre, was bitten by a snake. Havitlesar Chamri Chiv Rasa de Pumpadisa, they found that there were 13 white donkeys in Pumpadisa. Karinu Lakula, they tore all of them open. But unfortunately, Ishtakhu Trefa, they found they all were Trefas. They all had some sort of a puncture, a life-threatening defect in the inside. So that's so much for the 13 white donkeys of Pumpadisa. Havichad Bahu Gisa de Pumpadisa, there was one donkey all the way on the other side, and apparently it was a white donkey. Adi Uzli, unfortunately, until they got a hold of it, Maisile, he died from the snake bite. No, I'm sorry. My mistake. Adiosa Maisili, the donkey died. How did the donkey die? Achla Arya was eaten by a lion. Omale Abaye Dilma Chivya Dirabonin Tarke. Perhaps it was the snake of the rabbis that bit him. Dilesle Asuta, and there's no cure. So in other words, God sent this lion to eat up the donkey because this person, this officer, apparently persecuted the Jews. Dichsiv Uporeitz Godish Yishechenu Nachash. And the Pasuk tells us in Koheles, it says, he who breaches a fence will be bitten by a snake. So a snake bite is retribution for transgressing some sort of decree of the Chachamim. And even if he's cured by one snake bite, Rashi says, he'll eventually be killed by another snake or by some other means. And Abai surmised that this officer had perhaps violated rabbinic law, or he decreed something against the rabbis, and that's why there was no cure that was able to get for his snake bite. All the donkeys were not the right donkeys. He writes here that it's certainly possible for a person to die from a snake bite even if he's not guilty of violating some rabbinic enactment. So how did Abai know that this officer committed a sin? The answer is that since his cure was virtually at hand and it was lost only through some strange occurrence, evidently this snake bite was a special snake bite from heaven, and God said he's not going to recover from that snake bite. Now, although it's true that some violations of a doraisa carry the death penalty, some do not, but rabbinic offenses are punishable by death at the hand of God, misa b'dei shamayim. Rabbeinu Yonah offers the following explanation. It's often the case that one who violates biblical law actually respects it, but was motivated by his physical desire to commit the sin, and he was subsequently remorseful of it. His act is not a rejection of God or the obligations that he has, but rather a momentary lapse in the observance and the commitment to Hashem's will. But violations of rabbinic decree tend to derive from the lack of respect regarding rabbinic law. And the sinner, by disparaging the rabbinic laws for not having been written in the Torah and putting them on a lower level, taking them lightly, he maintains that there's no need to observe them. He's rejecting his obligation as a Jew. It's an assault on the integrity of an essential part of the Torah, and therefore he's deserving of death. Okay, then? So, Mirtz Hashem, tomorrow we'll start here on Daf Kuf Yud Amud Aleph Amru Le. And this is approximately 10 lines down from the top.